Joni Mitchell emerged onto the music scene in the early 1960s as a talented and unique folk singer. She combined a very special voice with poetic lyrics and anti-war and pro-environment politics. In 1998, Mitchell stopped recording new music, even refusing to pick up a guitar or sit at a piano. She was disgusted with the commercialism of the music industry and discrimination faced by women artists. Then, in 2007, she came back with a burst of artistic energy, including a new CD, a ballet, and an anti-war photomontage exhibit. I caught up with Mitchell in New York at a time of artistic fervor. I learned a lot about her personality, her politics, and her music. I'm Reese Ehrlich, and this is an intimate portrait of Joni Mitchell.
Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away.
New York's Little Italy bustles with music and kids playing carnival games at the annual San Gennaro Festival. The festival was first celebrated by Italian immigrants newly arrived in New York. But on this day, tucked away from the cacophony, a Canadian immigrant named Joni Mitchell quietly prepares her own celebration. She's hanging an art show and releasing her first CD of original music in 10 years, all on the same day. It's a time for intense work, but also for musing about her past. Joni tells me that when she began singing 45 years ago, she appreciated other musical styles, but even then wanted to develop something original.
I didn't want to borrow black soul, although 99% of my business did. No matter what country you were from, they sang with a black southern accent. I didn't want to falsify it. I wanted it to ease on up. But they don't, you know, and become organic, you know, because I loved it. Eventually it would seep up and become my own without being imitative.
They paved paradise, put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot.
One of Joni's most familiar songs and biggest hits is Big Yellow Taxi. It doesn't sound much like blues or rock, so she surprised me by saying she borrowed the song's style from rock and roller Chuck Berry.
Big Yellow Taxi is a nursery rhyme, but it's basically Chuck Berry. But with my voice, and you know, sometimes you wouldn't recognize necessarily the influences because they're not imitative per se, you know, but rock and roll was just Boogie Woogie played on guitar.
What is there in Big Yellow Taxi that's derivative from...
It's like a Chuck Berry song. In form and rhythm and everything, it's basically that genre. Like, Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline. Or, you know, way back about the woods, da-da-da-da-da-da. It's like, they paved paradise, put up a parking lot. I mean, it's the same stuff. It's, you know...
Paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam. And a big yellow taxi took away my old man. Don't it always seem to go? But you don't know what you've got till it's gone. You paved paradise.
I can't sing in that helium register anymore. I used to have three octaves, and because I wasn't a trained singer and I, you know, I had these three octaves, I didn't know I'm really an alto and that was falsetto.
So they paved paradise, put up a parking lot. With a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging night spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? The big paradise put up a parking lot.
Some critics have said years of smoking have taken their toll on Joni's voice. She argues that her voice has simply aged and also shows the after effects of a childhood bout with polio.
I've gone to throat specialists. No, I have singer's notes from singing incorrectly, like most of us do eventually. And also your high notes are tiny little muscles. Sopranos quit, you know, sopranos wear out, altos don't. So You know, the alto muscles are still there, you know. Something in the way I was carrying my head from this polio injury had done some damage there. So just by correcting my posture a little bit, I've got a little bit of that back. So polio did play into it. I think I'm singing very well, yeah, you know. I hope I don't hear that, oh, poor Joni and her smoking crap.
But leave me the birds and the bees. Please, don't it always seem to go? You don't know what you got till it's gone. The big paradise, put up a parking lot.
While her singing voice has changed, her poetic voice has not. Her political convictions have only gotten stronger over the years. She's written new songs opposing the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Why don't they learn from history? I mean, didn't they notice Russia went broke in Afghanistan? I mean, you can't beat these people on their own turf. You know, the whole thing's stupid. They just aren't observant. It's such a waste of money, you know. Like, I mean, in the meantime, there's so many domestic problems. And like Machiavelli said, people don't know what to do with peace. It always degenerates into fashion and fornication. Well, that's what we've got, these high fashion, you know, idiots, you know, showing their beaver every day as they get out of their car. That's what happened in Germany. So, you know, we are in an extremely decadent situation here. So I was trying to get to the essence of it, and my conclusion was, you know, theistically, when you have a concept that a male god, created the world all by himself in 7 days, you know, you're in trouble immediately.
Strong and wrong, you win only because that's the way it's always been. Men love war, that's what history's for. A mass murder mystery. History. History. Strong and wrong.
Her new music project began spontaneously. She suddenly felt the need to write music again. She hadn't intended to compose socially conscious songs, but they just seemed to emerge.
I was mad. I was mad at Bush. I was mad at Americans for being so complacent, you know, like for being so quick to try and expel Clinton for, you know, kinky sex in an elevator, and so slow to move on, you know, this Hitler. So I had an anger problem, you know, and the songs just started coming out in the studio as I explored these sounds on the synthesizer, and my attitude was, oh God, no, not another one. Because one of the things that that made me quit was, I said, I'm not going to write any more social commentary. I'm not going to write this. So I was mad at America, you know. And I thought, you know, come on, wake up, you know. Like, wake them, shake them, you know. But I didn't want to be the one.
All thou shalt not kill, but men love war. Is that what God is for? Just a rabbit's foot, just a lucky paw, for shock and awe, shock and awe. The dawn of man comes slow, thousands of years.
Joni Mitchell came by her rebellion at an early age. Her maiden name was Joan Anderson, and she was born in 1943 in a small town in Alberta, Canada. She quickly showed musical talent, but refused to follow the rules. She has bitter childhood memories.
I'd come to hate music. You know, twice in my life I've lost my love of music. Once as a child, they hit me with a ruler for playing by ear, you know, which I didn't know, but that's all teachers used to hit with the ruler for whatever they wanted to. It was the way it was taught. There was like corporal piano lessons, you know. But I took it kind of personally, and I didn't, you know, I had this desire to compose when I was seven, and I lost it until I was in my early 20s.
Help me, I think I'm falling in love again. When I get that crazy feeling, I know I'm in trouble again. I'm in trouble, cause you're a rambler and a gambler and a sweet talking ladies man.
You know, I could read when I was 7 and 8, and then they hit me with a ruler and I quit. And then when I started up again, I was 18, I took up the ukulele because I couldn't afford a guitar, $36 for a baritone uke. And you didn't need to read for that. And when I got into recording, when I began to create my own music, you didn't need to read for that. As I began to add band members, what I did was I sang the guitar lines, I sang the horn sections, and then I had them transcribed. You can hear it on Court and Spark. I leave some of the voices in with the horns.
While Joni never took music lessons as an adult, she did receive formal training as a visual artist. In fact, she originally planned on a painting career. Folk singing was just a sideline while attending art school in Calgary. But then there was that problem with customs and rules. She came to school in a skirt and high heels, while everyone else dressed like a bohemian.
Well, I got honors marks, but no, I did a lot of things unbecoming of an artist.
Well,
I didn't dress right. Like Charlie Parker, you know, came into town in a good suit, and they were all wearing the bohemian uniform, sandals, striped T-shirts, beret, and goatees. He comes in from a small town in a good suit, and they ridiculed him. But, you know, so I came in, and I had modeled in order to get money to go to art school. So I came in kind of in Jackie Kennedy high heels, and we were housed in a technical institute also. So there weren't many women in the school. It was like a lot of cafeteria cooks and mechanics, and that's the way art schools are usually, you know, they're considered trades.
Woke up, it was a Chelsea morning, and the first thing that I heard was a song outside my window, and the traffic wrote the words. It came a ringing up like Christmas bells and wrapping up like pies. And drums. Oh, won't you stay? We'll put on the day and we'll wear it till the night comes.
Joni soon discovered that she had a real talent for music. She hung out in local coffee houses and taught herself guitar. She began to ride the wave of folk music, then becoming popular in North America and around the world. But Joni had no local role models.
I'm a mimic, you know, like I do people's voices and things. I'm a mimic by nature. So, you know, I kind of mimicked my way into folk music. It was fun, it was easy, but it wasn't really where I lived. It wasn't the music of my soul, which was way out of my reach at that point.
The streets are paved with passers-by, and pigeons fly, and papers lie, waiting to blow away.
was a Chelsea morning, and the first thing that I knew, there was milk and toast and honey, and a bowl of oranges too, and the sun poured in like butterscotch, and stuck to all my senses.
Ray Charles and Lemon Henderson Ross were probably my main. My last influence was right on the brink of the time that I began to make music.
I don't do her all at times. I'm stuck in the spot that's hot. I keep hearing bells all around me. Jingle in the lucky jackpots. They keep you tantalized. They keep you reaching for your wallet here in Fool's Paradise. I talked to a cat from Des Moines. He said he ran a cleaning plant. That cat was clanking with coin. Must have had a genie in a lamp, cause every time I dropped a dime, I blew it. He kept ringing bells, nothing to it. He only got three oranges, three lemons, three cherries, three plums. I'm losing my taste for fruit, watching the dry cleaner do it. Like Midas in a polyester suit. It's all luck, it's just luck. You get a little lucky and you make a little money.
I started with folk music because it was kind of fadistic. College kids sat around and sang, but nobody played guitar back then. It's not like, you know, there were no local musicians to speak of. You know, maybe a standard playing piano player or something. But I came in on folk music because I was a pro in 6 months. It was easy, you know. But my real music influence was Billie Holiday and all of this. They took a while to develop.
And you've got a jazz sensibility in your composing.
Oh, yes.
And your writing.
Oh, no, I'm a jazzer at heart. Yeah, I've made my best friendships in that camp. You know, rock and rollers can't play. I'm kind of a freak in that camp. You know, Miles and I used to play those festivals, and we were always, you know, what's wrong with this picture? You know, we were the two odd people out, you know.
Israel's rattle and Nazi dread, the able-bodied have shipped away. Burl McKee gets her tea leaves red.
Joni became known for incorporating her own experiences into the music. Longtime musical collaborator Herbie Hancock, who recently issued a jazz CD of Joni's music, chose to record her famous song, Tea Leaf Prophecy.
It's biographical. It's about her mother and an experience her mother had before she got married.
Out of the blue, just passing through, a young flight sergeant on 2 weeks leave says, Merle McKee, no one else will do. And he seals a tea leaf prophecy. Oh, those nights were strong and soft. Private passions and secret stories. Nothing about him ticked around. And he looked so cute in his uniform. She plants her garden in the spring. He does the winter shoveling. But summer's just a sneeze in a long, long bad winter cold. Soon she says, I'm leaving here. But she don't go.
In the 60s, Joni's career skyrocketed. She became part of the folk panoply that included Joan Baez, Joan Collins, and Bob Dylan. Mitchell became known as much for her poetic lyrics as for her innovative music, and yet she writes the melodies before the words.
It's
going on Christmas. They're cutting down trees, they're putting up reindeer and singing songs of joy and peace. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on.
It's a harder puzzle going that way, but it coughs up a... It's like you do the score and then you do make the movie. But by the score, you know where your climactic statements fall, and you know where your descriptive passages can go. And you get a more unusual rhyme scheme, which people may or may not like. I mean, it annoys the French because they're still kind of iambic pentameter people, and so they get annoyed with my rhyme schemes. But they come out of the music in the same way that John Hendricks parquet saxophone solos. So it's more like the way John Hendricks worked.
He tried hard to help me, you know. He put me at ease, and he loved me so not. He made me weak in the knees. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. I'm so hard to handle. I'm selfish and I'm sad. Now I've gone and lost the best baby that I ever had. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. I wish I had a river so long I would teach my feet to
By the 1970s, Joni started expanding beyond her folk roots into other musical styles. A number of her albums were not commercially successful at the time, but have won praise from critics and musicians in the intervening years. In 1978, jazz bassist Charles Mingus wrote 6 songs for Joni and asked her to compose the lyrics. The resulting 1979 album, called simply Mingus, showed she had chops as a jazz singer as well as composer.
The rain slammed hard as bars. It caught me by surprise. Muds of the planet and shook me down for alibis. For the keeper to release me.
Jazz musicians have long appreciated Joni's music. I asked Herbie Hancock why he chose to make a CD of her songs.
I would think, you know, jazz musicians would recognize that structure of the chords that Joni uses as being, you know, totally familiar. Her melodies too. They have notes in them that sound like notes that jazz players would use, you know. The approach is similar to the choices that jazz players would make. Edith and the Kingpin or Tea Leaf Prophecy from my new record, the chord structure is more like what jazz musicians would use. My experience with paying attention to words is nil. I never paid attention to words. I mean, we pay attention to harmony, to textures, to melodies, you know, and I'm not the only one that's guilty. It's very typical of, you know, jazz instrumentalists to do that. But I didn't want to do that this time. I really felt the extreme necessity to make the words first.
Love came to my door, sleeping wrong,
and a madman's soul. He thought for sure I'd seen him dancing up a river in the dark, looking for a woman to call and spark.
Many of her lyrics are narrative. They're descriptive of a scene and something happening in the scene, not just intuitive. So it's treated almost like doing a movie score. If I'm going to do Joni Mitchell's music, because I've known her and been her friend for a number of years now, knowing that the foundation of her music is really her poetry, if I'm going to do justice to her or attempt to do justice to her music, I have to begin with the words.
Seemed like you read my mind. You saw me mistrusting him, still acting kind. You saw how I worried sometimes, how I worried sometimes.
In preparing for the recording sessions, Herbie did something he had never done before. He gathered saxophonist Wayne Shorter and the other musicians to talk about the words.
We gave all the musicians a copy of the lyrics before we went in to record each of the songs. We would sit in the engineer's booth and discuss the lyrics and ask questions about the meaning of the lyrics, because, I mean, her words are so brilliant, the metaphors and the imagery are incredible.
Did that change how people play the music?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why I wanted to do it that way. That's why I went to great lengths to try to figure out how can we get closer to the words and the meaning of the words. And this happened for a number of months. I mean, just poured into them. And before we recorded each of the songs, we would look at the words for that song, all the musicians, Dave Holland, Wayne Shorter, Lionel Luwicki, the guitarist, and Vinnie Colaiuta. Vinnie's the drummer. You know, we all sat in the engineer's booth, and when we took 10 minutes to 15 minutes to discuss the words, you know, what do they mean? And it's a process that none of us had ever done before. You know, and Wayne Shorter, who I'm sure he just has this sixth sense about words and meaning, the meaning of words and metaphors. He hadn't gone through this process either. Everybody enjoyed going through that.
Big man arrives. Disco dancers greet him. Plain clothes cops greet him. Small town big man, fresh lipstickless name.
Edith and the Kingpin was, you know, it starts off in a club. We discussed all of that, and we discussed the characters that were in the lyrics. But not only the characters in the lyrics, but what characters might be in that scene. Wayne Shorter, for example, mentioned when before we did Edith and the Kingpin, he says, well, this is a club, you know, we're saying it's a club scene in a small town, and there's the big man who's the pimp, and there are the prostitutes. When the band is playing and the lyrics say the band sounds like typewriters. So I guess the band wasn't very good.
From victims of typewriters, the band sounds like typewriters. But the big man, he's not listening. His eyes hold Edith, his left hand holds his right. What does that he grips it
start to talk about the characters that are on the scene, the pimp and the prostitutes, and Edith, who's a kind of a new young prostitute that's coming into town. And Wayne said, I'm going to be the guys that are at the bar that are kind of looking at the chicks and kind of whispering to each other. You know, so Wayne was talking about characters that weren't even depicted in the words, but would be in the scene, which I said, this is fantastic. Yeah, let's do all of that. Let's paint, you know. And so we used a process that's a more minimalist process where less is more, hopefully.
You're listening to An Intimate Portrait of Joni Mitchell. Coming up, Joni Mitchell's famous battles with the recording industry. More after this. While fellow musicians always recognized Joni Mitchell's talent, for many years, the U.S. recording industry didn't. Music companies considered her poetry obtuse and later music as not commercially viable. Joni's strong independent ways quickly clashed with the industry's male-dominated, profit-oriented ethic. On her second recording, the record company provided a producer who supposedly understood what would sell.
He was like the way they were back then. It was like a heckler. They'd break in on you in the middle of a performance, and how many times? And it was, you know, I said to the engineer afterwards, this is going to kill my love of music if I have to go through this. And he's going away for 2 weeks. Do you think we can get this done before he gets back? And he said, yes, Henry Louis. So Henry and I made 13 albums together, and I never worked with a producer after that, except on the classical material. I got my then ex-husband, Klein, to help me.
I came upon a child of God. He was walking along the road, and I asked him, where are you going? And this he told me, I'm going on down to Yasgur's farm. I'm gonna join in a rock and roll band. I'm gonna
says that prior to the 1970s, the music industry was dominated by entrepreneurs who exploited artists but also understood good music. She praises Ahmet Erdogan, the head of Atlantic Records, who, among other achievements, promoted the career of Ray Charles. She says that all changed as the industry became dominated by fewer and fewer corporate owners.
The old guys like Ahmet Erdogan, they genuinely, Ahmet loved music. You know, so the old crooks still respected an innovator. I mean, you look at the Ray Charles movie, you see Ahmet saying to Ray Charles, no, we don't want another Nat King Cole. Who are you? Well, that is when the owner of the company loves music. But they don't let Sabine Counter's business now, so they don't want that. They don't want anything too original because it doesn't sell. They want it all to sound the same on the radio station so the commercials pop out. So music has
is ick now. I say that the muse is gone. It's all that's left is ick.
Not to get ourselves back to the garden. Then can I walk beside you? I have come here to lose the smoke.
Your music would date. It won't hold up if you get caught up in that game, you know. And they want it to date and be disposed of every decade. That's the racket, you know. So they can get a young artist, and they don't have to get them to second contract, and they don't have to pay them anything. That's what they now. They don't even look for talent. They admitted it. We're not looking for talent. We're looking for a look. Producer can take care of it. Pro Tools, he can fix it as long as they look good, you know. And then they can throw them out before they get to second contract, and they never have to pay them much. So. You know, it's all a racket.
By the time we got to Woodstock, we were 500,000 strong, and everywhere there was song and celebration. And I dreamed I saw the bombers riding shotgun in.
It's the nature of the business that they're training people to kill you off after you get a decade. You see that, you know, that artist from the 70s or something, you know. For a while they called me that artist from the 60s. Well, that's crazy because I got in late in the 60s. I didn't start making music till 64, and I didn't get a record deal till the late 60s. So I don't know, but basically you're stigmatized as an artist of a decade. You're only expected, they only want you to go a decade because... then they don't have to be fair.
And we got to get ourselves back to the garden.
This girl came up to me on the boat the other day and she said, "I love your music." "I guess I shouldn't," she said. You know, I said, "Look, listen to you, you know, like, I'm used to hearing that from boys. Oh, I'm the wrong demographic, but I like it." So they've been brainwashed by fear to be afraid. Another kid told me, you know, he had a record of mine in the car and somebody said, "Are you still listening to that old stuff?" And he yanked it out. They're so fearful to be unhip, you know, and nobody even knows how to dress themselves now without a dresser. They're afraid to make a statement, you know, for fear that they're uncool, you know. It's terrible. I mean, it's the death of individuality.
Joni says the recording industry definitely treats women artists differently than men.
We are paid less, of course. That's like everything. And women have their own problems. And I didn't show my tits, so they didn't really know how to market me. That's one thing. You know, they're hoodlums.
Oh, darn.
Every time I made a record and it got trashed, I'd say, "Well, I'll just get better," you know. Like, you know, you have to be 100 times as good to be considered half as good because I'm a girl, you know. So I'll just get better. So I'd think, well, that's even better, you know. Like, and there was a lot of growth, but it was never. But they were still elevating this early stuff and lamenting my lost youth and everything. So, you know, the criticism and the understanding of my work was so ignorant and it was so frustrating.
you know, growth was occurring on all levels as a writer and as a musician, and it was not being acknowledged, you know, publicly. There were still loyal fans that were following the whole journey, enough to keep me in the business. But basically, the record company was saying, you didn't give us anything.
Shine on Vegas and Wall Street. Place your bets. Shine on all the fishermen with nothing in their nets. Shine on rising oceans and evaporating seas. Shine on our Frankenstein technologies.
I heard a black kid on the radio going, well, Bob Dylan and Joni, they let them do what they wanted. I wanted to call it, say, no, they didn't. You had to fight tooth and nail. I had in my contract, no producer. It was unprecedented.
Tunnel vision. Shine on fertile farmlands buried under subdivisions. Oh, let your little light shine. Dazzling darkness that restores us in deep sleep. Shine on what we throw away and what we keep. Shine on Reverend Pearson who threw away the vain old god.
Here at the New York Art Gallery, workers busily saw open crates and unwrapped the huge photos. Joni Mitchell's artwork has arrived a day late, and everyone is scrambling to get the show hung on time. Joni oversees the placement and hanging of each of some 40 pieces of art.
Let's try the last two on that wall and bring the other two over.
Joni has created huge triptych photo montages of international villains and celebrities, all melded together in an anti-war theme. She tells me that she paints the same way she creates music. Both involve putting down layers until something fully formed emerges.
I paint music. I approach music visually, you know, in very much the same manner as I paint. Layer it on. You do your preliminary sketch, you build your skeleton, and then you start putting an additional area there, but not there, you know? Like, it's like, okay, you put your first mark on your canvas, and when you put your second one on, where do you put it? Well, your eye is drawn to put it to the upper right in the same way that you lay your first bed, whatever it might be, a bass part or a drum part, and then your ear is drawn to put a little bit there, but not there. It's exactly the same process.
This exhibit is a departure from Mitchell, who had displayed paintings in the past. This time, she used disposable cameras to shoot images on a broken big-screen TV. The photos came out as eerie negative images with green and crimson tints. Then she grouped them together as triptych combinations. One, for example, shows washed-out images of old Busby Berkeley musicals counterposed with ominous tanks rolling down a street.
All of these projects, my goal was, I thought, Charlie Chaplin, Busby Berkeley, and Groucho all knew how to deal with heavy material in a palatable way that people didn't want to, they got the message without wanting to slit their wrists. You know what I mean? It was like the art of delivering the truth in a manner that was still palatable and make you cry but wouldn't make you paranoid.
Continued opposition to war and corporate destruction of the environment.
Like, I'm staying in a hotel, it says it's green. It's got this card by the bed, we're green, we're conserving water. If you want your sheets changed, put this on the bed. But they've got all these electrical buttons to pull the curtains. You know, give me back a pull cord. You know, if you're green, give me a pull cord. Why do you need juice for that?
So whenever we do hang here, it should be high. Jody should know.
So maybe these two should be hung a little higher.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
suggest.
Yeah, than the rest. And they're odd. And see, because here...
Joni Mitchell is hanging her art exhibit and launching her Shine CD both at the same time.
On the ocean, eagle at the top of a tree, those crazy crows always making a commotion.
She says this flurry of activity contrasts strongly with the past 10 years.
It's my music coming from what I loved. But then I forgot what I loved. And for 10 years I forgot what I loved. And Starbucks had this artist choice collection thing. So most people just phoned it in, took the money, called, did the politically correct thing, named their friends and took the money and ran, you know. So I'm like, we're 4 months later and they're going, what are you doing? And I said, well, look, to me it's kind of life or death. I'm listening to everything that ever knocked my socks off to see what holds up. Maybe if I can reacquaint myself with what I loved, I can make music again. So it worked. I made my Desert Island tape, which I wouldn't have done of my own volition. I still carry it when I travel, and it's you know, people went, well, that sounds like, well, it's all black artists. I said, no, I mean, there's you know, with Duke Ellington and Miles and Billie Holiday and Edith Piaf and Steely Dan.
It makes mountains into molehills. Big money kicks the wide, wide world around. Blackberry in the orchard, and ladies in my garbage cans. It's getting so bold, but no one wants to shut up. He's got a right to roam this land.
North of Vancouver. As she was preparing photos for her art exhibit, she got inspired by the words of a neighbor.
I just was so in love with ripple watching, looking out at the ocean and the privilege of having this beautiful property and this beautiful view. And I went in that night, I was just, and my neighbor came over and said the line in the second song, you know, when I get to heaven, if it's not like this, I'm coming right back down here, right? So we were both in agreement, we were in the right place, you know. And that night, that piece of music poured out. Just the piano part, you know, and then later I orchestrated.
I was talking to my neighbor. He said, when I get to heaven, if it's not like this,
I'll just hop a cloud and I'm coming right back down here, back to this heavenly bliss. You see those lovely hills, they won't be there for long. They're gonna tear them down and sell them to California. Here come the toxic spills, miners poking all around. When this place looks like a moonscape, don't say it in one year.
The CD also contains Joni's interpretation of Rudyard Kipling's famous poem, If.
Somebody read me the Kipling poem. I picked up and I said, oh, that's a great poem for these times. With a few changes, I got permission from the estate to make those changes. I disagreed with his ending. And there was a couple of archaic things that I paraphrased. I didn't change it much. If you can keep your head while all about you, people are losing theirs and blaming you. If you can trust yourself when everybody doubts you, and make allowance for their doubting too.
If you can keep your head while all about you, people are losing theirs and blaming you. If you can trust yourself when everybody doubts you,
Kipling's poem portrays a father giving advice to his son. Mitchell uses most of the poem, but also made some changes. She doesn't like Kipling's advice at the end of the poem.
Basically, what he tells the boy in the last stanza is, if you can endure, you'll inherit the earth. And I thought, that's not what makes you inherit the earth. To inherit the earth, you can own things, but if you don't see them, you don't really own them. You know, maybe your servant who wipes them every day owns them more than you do, because you just walk by them, you know, with a head full of business. You know, you don't own things unless you give them your full attention, and you only own them for that moment that you give them your full attention. So how do you inherit the earth? By being awake.
If you can feel the journey of the minute, with 60 seconds worth of wonder and delight, and the earth is yours, and everything that's in it, but more than that, I know you'll be all right. You'll be all right. You got the ins,
you got the fight, you got the ins.
You got the fight, you got the ins,
you got the fight, you got the inside.
You got the fight, you got the inside.
You've been listening to an intimate portrait of Joni Mitchell. I'm your host, Reese Ehrlich.